Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey, folks, welcome to another edition of Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Ronnie Coleman, State Fire Marshal, old friend. He's been on the program many times. And Mike and Ronnie are in Sacramento. And I'm here in the studio in Santa Barbara. Hey, you guys, welcome.
Hey, Ted, thank you for the introduction. Yeah, we're up here at Fire Force One in Elk Grove, California, visiting with former State Fire Marshal Ronnie Coleman. Chief, thank you again.
Glad to be here.
A couple of quick announcements here, actually just one from the Fire Safe Council locally. This Thursday the 19th at 9 a.m., come visit the new County Fire Chief Eric Peterson, Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Also be having a round table to discuss and get caught up on local going on in the community. Again, this Thursday, 9 o'clock, Santa Barbara Red Cross, 2707 State Street in Santa Barbara. And with that, we jump into today's show. Chief and I just came back from Plumas County, so we had a lot of time to kick around some ideas on what we wanted to talk about today, as if we had any shortage of ideas.
350 miles of conversation.
Wanted to get into, is the public at whole, Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver, getting the value of their property taxes and when they buy for fire, or what they receive in fire service today?
Well, I think what you and I talked about the other day was this concept of people taking public safety services for granted and yet simultaneously not knowing much about how much it costs, why it costs that much, and what kind of benefits they can expect with different service levels.
We could say that, I guess, about all public services, water, streets, highways, police, fire, public health, all the things that are paid for through property taxes or special assessment taxes. I guess that kind of leads us into one question. How are fire departments paid for in the state of California? It's not all the same.
Well, it's quite complex, actually. The phrase that I came up with when you and I were first conversing about this was this idea that there's no money-back guarantees in fire protection. In other words, you pay, and then you get a benefit, and then the benefit either accrues to your advantage or to your neighbor's advantage. And what we were talking about specifically was the fact that the vast majority of paid fire departments, municipal fire departments, are paid for out of property tax. And it's a general fund obligation into a community. But then it gets really complicated when you start looking at things like fire protection districts, because in many cases, fire protection districts have different funding formulas, and there are literally fire departments in the state of California that we jokingly refer to them as the three Bs, barbecue, bingo, and breakfast. They have to do fundraisers to just put gas in the fire truck. So there's no level playing field for fire protection, and most people in most communities really don't have an in-depth knowledge of how their fire service is provided, how it's funded, and then what kind of benefits they can expect from it.
Well, I think what got us in discussing this on the way up to Plumas was the challenges people are having now getting property insurance. And it's becoming more and more of a challenge throughout California, not just necessarily in the urban interface areas. And how the insurance companies view fire departments is also starting to change. ISO just came out with their new rating. Can you get into that a little bit? Because I don't think the public as a whole has any idea how much this transfers into what they pay for structured fire insurance.
Well, let's take a person who owns a home. Let's just call it a single-family dwelling. In a single-family dwelling, there is a property tax that's assessed against that property. And then if you have that single-family home, for most part, you have to have insurance to protect that home. The mortgage is required by the bank. And subsequently, you have an insurance cost for that particular occupancy. Now, if we change that formula to a business, businesses have a different funding arrangement. They pay property tax, all right. They pay insurance. But they also contribute to communities through sales tax, which is a different avenue or a mechanism, I should say, of funding sources. So when we talk about a person who is a single-family dwelling owner, and a man's home is his own castle, right? How much do they pay for fire protection is highly dependent upon the level of service in that community. If it's a volunteer department, it's not free. If it's a paid department, it can be fairly expensive. But the fact of the matter is there are costs and benefits that accrue to people. That's why it's important that the average homeowner really understand what fire protection means to them. Where is their closest fire station? And how often is that fire station available to them? What's it staffed with? What kind of level of service is it being staffed by? Because there is no one standard fits all in California.
Well, up to now, I don't think the community as a whole has been that much engaged in the fire service and how much it costs and what's available to them and how it impacts on them. All they know is they pick up the telephone, dial 911, somebody shows up. Not a lot of concentration as to how that gets paid for. But that's changing as the insurance companies are starting to come in and ask some fairly aggressive questions as to what's available and how property is being protected.
Well, it's not just the insurance industry that's asking questions. It's also public policymakers, like people who are putting in new housing developments. What kind of protection is going to be provided? Can you extend existing protection to protect it? Do you have to put in a new fire station? What we're really talking about here is this concept of what fire service is based upon is risk. And the risk changes from place to place. And the understanding of how you're coping with that risk varies drastically. I'm going to go back to something you said 5 minutes ago, and that is people don't care until they have an emergency. The average person in, and I'm when I say average, I'm not trying to say that they're just mediocre. It's just that the average person doesn't really understand what happens when they dial 911, what kind of resources it takes to put a fire truck in their front yard in 5 minutes. Yet there's a public expectation that we'd be able to do that. I mean, we have people who live 20 miles from a fire station who still have the idea that the fire truck should be there in 5 minutes, and it's not going to work.
Is that a reasonable expectation to have today? And who's setting that expectation? Is that the fire service? Is that the NFPA and the insurance industry? Or is that the public as a whole?
Well, the level of service in almost every community is subject to some kind of jurisdictional oversight. Now, let's talk about a city. A city council is the one who sets the level of service. Let's go to a district. It's a district board of directors who set the level of service. In almost all cases, it's based upon community expectations and community risk. Fire protection is a case of calculated risk. You do things so that you've got resources in place to be able to cope with whatever problems are going to get thrown at you. And I would submit that the vast majority of people don't expect a fire to ever happen to them. That's one of the reasons why you're going to look in most communities, you're going to find out that a significant number of the fire calls are emergency medical services and not fire.
Well, and that's a different criteria because as we go across the country, the fire department may or may not actually be the one that responds on an EMS call. Now, in California, that's pretty traditional. You go back east, however, and your medical services are provided by either private, public, or semi-corporate ambulance facilities and or volunteers themselves.
That's exactly true. As a matter of fact, the one thing that I can almost say without too much fear of contradiction is the fact that almost every community has a different mix of emergency medical services resources and fire protection resources. And the degree to which those groups have decided to work together makes a significant difference in the level of service. That's the term I was trying to get to earlier when we were talking about who sets the level of service. Level of service literally means what do you put on the ground when somebody dials up for an emergency. If it's just a piece of fire apparatus, or if it's just an ambulance, or if it's just a taxi cab, there's going to be a different level of service experienced by people.
Well, I think my personal experience with emergencies is people frequently think it took forever for emergency services to get there. That more often than not is not actually the case, and there's evidence to prove how long it takes for somebody to get there. But certainly perception of what I might think is a reasonable amount of time and what someone else may think is different. We look at NFPA 1710 and 1720. Those are the reference documents that seem to be referred to the most.
2 minutes.
But how often does somebody actually sit down and ask, what does the community want? Because some communities don't care if they get there in 5 minutes, 8 minutes, or even 10 minutes. Others do.
Well, more and more communities are beginning to recognize that risk assessment is an integral part of setting the level of service. And There's a project right now called Vision 2020, which has been talking about community risk reduction, or what they call CRR, which talks about paying really close attention to what values are at risk, what resources are available to reduce that risk, and then how much sustainability do you have to be able to provide that resource.
So when was the last time you were in a meeting that somebody said, well, why don't we ask the community what they want?
Well, that's not a fair to ask me, because I've done a lot of consulting where I hold facilitated meetings with the members of the community and community leaders in and of themselves. And when I use the word community leader, I'm not talking about necessarily an elected leader. Homeowners Association is an influence over things. Chambers of Commerce, influence. Businessmen associations, influence. When you start talking about community expectations, I'd be real candid and tell you, though, that most people really don't have a real strong understanding of what level of risk is in their community, because they're only looking at it from their perspective.
Right. We'll get it. Well, hold that thought. We're going to come back and get into this even further on Community Alert. Visiting today with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie Coleman from Elk Grove. His office is here just outside of Sacramento on Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Live at KCSB, AM 1290.
Folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Ronnie Coleman, former state fire marshal. And Ronnie and Mike are in Sacramento. I'm here in the studio in Santa Barbara. And Mike.
Well, we're coming to you today from the offices of Fire Force One, just outside of Sacramento in Elk Grove, with former state fire marshal Ronnie Coleman. And we're talking about, is the public getting the value in their fire service? Are they getting what they're paying for? And we're kind of getting into the weeds a little bit, but we're also getting into the meat of what really matters. Let's get into community risk protection and reduction programs. How is that so important, and how does that attribute to quality of service?
Well, I was kind of smiling when you were talking about this idea of is the citizen getting their money's worth. The answer is, and I'll give it to you really candidly, yes, no, and maybe. Yes, they're getting a bargain, because it's an insurance policy. The level of service in the community translates into what can show up in your house within a reasonable time frame to do something about a problem that's beyond your control.
Well,
it's not for free.
That's true.
Yeah, another one of my standing jokes is there's no such thing as free fire protection. Everything has a cost factor to it, even a volunteer fire department. And I won't mention names per se, but I'll mention one fire department that you and I both know, because we've interacted with a lot of volunteers, where the guy who's driving the truck has to use his personal credit card to refill the gas tank on the way back to the fire station, because they don't have a budget to put fuel in their fire truck. And yet the fire truck's about a $300,000 piece of apparatus.
Hmm. Well, you know, and that raises an interesting question about the community. Does the community know that? And if they do know that, why are they allowing that to happen, understanding that this is what's there to protect their assets should a fire occur? Is that apathy because they don't think a fire is going to occur, or is there another factor involved?
Well, there's a lot of apathy going around right now, but who cares?
You may actually be right in that sarcasm.
So what I mentioned earlier when you asked me the question about are you getting your money's worth, you got to understand what your level of service is in your community. I'm an advocate of this concept called CRR, which is Community Risk Reduction. And what that actually translates into is dividing your community up into components and where your risk and your values are being calculated in advance of a fire, and you're doing everything you possibly can to get the property owner and the resources of the community to reduce the probability of fire. Let's just talk about risk for a second. What is risk? Risk is the possibility that something could happen. And risk has two aspects of it: frequency and consequence. And I'll give you an example of a frequency. what probability do you think that somebody in their lifetime will have a fire in their garage? The probability of that is actually fairly high. Okay, what's the consequence of having a fire in your garage? Well, if it starts at 9 o'clock in the morning when you're wide awake and you smell smoke, and you call 911 and you get a response, that's one thing. What if it's 3 o'clock in the morning when that fire starts? And you say to yourself, well, how can I protect myself against a fire that starts at 3 o'clock in the morning? Well, it has to do with smoke detectors and sprinklers and things of that nature. So what we're talking about here, and I think this is the theme that we were trying to get across, is the average person doesn't think of themselves as being a potential risk for a fire, but they are. And they've got to be part of the dialogue or the expectations of what they expect the fire department to do about it if they do have a fire. If you dial 911, who's coming? Where are they coming from? How many of them are coming? The standing joke in some parts of California is people will leave their metropolitan community, move out into a rural area, have no concept. They'll buy a $500,000 ranch house or whatever the case may be, but having no idea that that fire truck down the street doesn't have anybody in it.
Well, those are the equity immigrants that you've spoken about.
I call
about.
Them equity immigrants, yeah.
They expect that of all public services, on-demand public services, if they're down on the main drag of any metropolitan city. Well, one of the things that Ted's worked on quite a bit is community wildfire protection plans, CWPPs, which are kind of a narrow version of the same thing that you're talking about for the wildland interface. And the likelihood of us having a fire in the San Marcos Pass is probably 100%. Wouldn't you agree, Ted?
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that, we're just to take a minute here, expand on this a little bit. Especially new home buyers that are moving into an area have no idea of what they're getting into as far as insurance or fire protection are concerned, and many times they don't ask the right questions, and people really need to be asking those questions when they move into a new area, obviously.
Well, what would you see as the top three things that people need to be thinking about?
Well, I think the things are, it's evacuation. I mean, where are they going to go, and how are they going to get there during an emergency? And then considering the different kinds of emergencies that we have in our area, not only do we have fires, but we have landslides and earthquakes and, you know, other things that can definitely be a problem for people not only in their homes but traveling and around the neighborhoods and that sort of thing. And then also I think that we need to have people considering what are they going to do if there's no one there to help them? Are they capable of helping themselves, and have they accrued enough resources so that they can feel comfortable for a certain length after a large incident?
Well, that's consistent with what we've been talking about for the last 3 days.
Except the subtle difference I might add is, and I bet you can relate to this. Have you ever bought an insurance policy and one of the questions they ask you is, where's the closest fire hydrant?
Always, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. My question is this, and that is, what's in that hydrant? In other words, is there water there or not? Because believe it or not, there's a lot of hydrant systems that are inadequately being served. The more important question from a standpoint of community risk is, where is the closest fire station to my home? And what are they going to do if I dial 911? What expectation can I have? Should I have? Will I have? For example, if I send you a person on a fire truck by themselves, they can only do so much. If I send you a fire truck with five people on it, they can do considerably more. And back at the outset of this program, we started talking about the fact that fire protection is a variable across the landscape. You never can tell exactly what you've got just by looking at what you've got. You drive by a fire station every day. There's one, remember yesterday I was telling you about the station down the street from here?
Yep.
Is that people drive by here all day long, but nobody realizes that station has X number of resources in it. And that's what I'm talking about community risk reduction, not fire department's activities to reduce risk, but what is the private citizen's obligation to reduce the risk.
Well, I think that's going to increase. In fact, I just pulled a building permit, and one of the things that I had to do is provide a fire suppression plan, which included the issue of fire hydrants and what the water flow was and pressure, some pretty legitimate questions to be asked. So it's not just the insurance company that wants to know. The fire department wants to know from a prevention point of view.
Right.
So, you know, I think Ted's right. People are moving into the rural areas, not just in Santa Barbara, but throughout the western United States in particular, and they're not really aware that the services are not the same. And not all fire trucks are staffed the same.
Not only that, they're not all the same color.
Well, when we were up in Plumas, you've got a collage of different levels of fire service there in the county, and there's only a couple of full-time operations, and that's only with minimum staffing.
Yep. Well, I think the focus of this particular dialogue was there's no money-back guarantee that fire protection is going to do what we want it to do unless there's an activity on part of the property owner. In other words, what I'm talking about is community risk reduction is not the fire department's job. It's the citizen's job. See, we don't stand a chance of accomplishing anything unless we're properly notified and given a proper lead time to be able to get there in time to do something about something that's gone wrong. And that leads us back to this idea of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Community risk reduction is all about reducing risk.
Well, the same can be said about crime prevention and police departments going around saying, you know, harden your house, increase lighting, increase your visibility from the roadway. A lot of the same things that the fire department's saying, because it can't be everywhere at once. So, but when we look at how much this all costs, I mean, there's hard costs. There's the check you write to the county for your property tax. There's your SRFA fee in the event that you're paying that. You may be in an area of the state that has a fire protection district, and you're paying a bond or you're paying an extra fee for that. In the case of, like, San Marcos Pass Volunteers, that's a volunteer fire company. It's a private nonprofit organization. Not a lot of those left in California, but they're still around, and they're funded completely different than all the others.
Well, what we talk about there, the word I use is called per capita fire protection, and that is how much does it cost the average person to have fire protection for a year. And the way we look at that is to take the fire department's budget and divide it by the number of people who live there and who are paying taxes. You know, overly simplified version, let's say that I've got 10,000 people in my community, and each one of them pays only $25 for fire protection. It'll generate X amount of money. Now, what if I take that same $25 rate and apply it against a community with 50,000 people in it? There's a different amount of money being generated. And so what we're really talking about here is two things. One of them is, what's it cost to you as a personal taxpayer? And then what does it cost the community to provide that service?
1 minute.
Well, with that thought, let's kind of get together here for our next break. Visiting today with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie Coleman up here in Elk Grove in his office for Fire Force One. Ted Adams in the studio with Richard Dugan on the flight deck on Community Alert, Not If But When. Positive preparation for disaster, live on the Internet on KZSB AM 1290.
Welcome back, folks, to the show. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Ronnie Coleman, former state fire marshal there in Sacramento. And I'm in the studio. Okay, Mike.
Well, let's get down into the components of fire protection from the fire service side. What are the components that come together that provide it?
Well, we talked earlier about cost and consequence. Well, there are components of fire protection. And each one of these components is a variable in many communities. And I'll just start off with the basics, the fire station itself. Where is it located? How many of them are there in the jurisdiction that you're living in? And how are they strategically placed in order to be able to respond in a timely fashion to the various elements of the community itself? Second component is what's in that fire station. And that has to do with apparatus. It has to do with staffing levels. It has to do with the resources that you've got there to bring to bear on any given emergency. For example, there's a big difference between sending an engine company by itself to go handle a medical aid if you have another organization that has an engine company and a rescue squad, that sort of thing. Then the third component of every fire department is its program activity. What's it actually doing? What kind of training is going on? What kind of fire prevention is going on? What kinds of public education is going on? And these are what we refer to as the components of a delivery system. And they vary across the landscape.
Well, I would think by far the biggest expense is going to be personnel and coupled by physical plant. Some fire districts and fire departments own their buildings. Others are leasing them from another organization within county government, or maybe they're private and there's a lease. All kinds of different arrangements for physical plant. Some organizations own their vehicles. Others lease them. Some of them are leasing them from themselves. Others are leasing them from finance companies. A lot of that stuff is not something you just go in and write a check for.
Well, and there's also the component of whether or not the physical and the vehicular resources are modern or whether they're old. I mean, I've been in fire stations 100 years old that are still in service today.
Well, you and I've been on some that are basically falling down. So the idea that everyone's living large in these large museum castles is certainly not true as you go across the state. It's not true in Santa Barbara.
Well, I don't pick on anybody in particular when I make this statement, but remember, we're talking to trying to get people to understand their fire protection better. And what better way to understand it than to go visit the station? You know, go down and walk in it and knock on the door and see who answers and pick up the brochures that are mounted on the outside of the building or whatever. What I'm suggesting here is that modern fire protection is really very, very dependent upon community support. Community support is a very important part of community risk assessment. Community risk assessment is a very important part of planning for fire protection. So it's kind of like this vicious circle. The more the community knows about what it's doing, the more they can support what is the right thing to do, and fire protection gets better over time.
Well, I think when we look at fire, we look at the fire suppression operations. You've got building inspections and enforcement and fire sprinkler issues and inspecting schools and hospitals, all the aspects that fire departments get involved in the fire prevention side. But then you've also got the issue of EMS, emergency medical services, and rapidly expanding emergency management responsibilities. There's all kinds of changes occurring within the public safety arena with the introduction of emergency management and FEMA and the concepts of NIMS and SIMS and what have you. That's expanding their role, but not necessarily expanding the revenue streams to pay for it all.
Yeah, you remember the movie Ghostbusters?
Oh, yeah.
Who are you going to call? Well, who are you going to call when you have an emergency in your home? I'll be willing to bet you that 99.9% of society today believes that they should call the fire department and that the fire department should show up with adequate equipment and adequate training and adequate control to be able to fix their problem. And what we're suggesting here is that's probably true in some places, but it's probably also not true in other places.
I think rural America is better situated for those kinds of events to occur because they're a little bit more self-sustained for the most part. That's changing as the equity immigrants move in. But overall, I think rural America is used to doing more for themselves. That's why they live there. You get into the metropolitan areas, it would be like that lady you and I saw that got burned out of their apartment here the other day here locally. The news people come in and they do the interview, and her response in tears is, who's going to come and help me? I don't know what to do.
Well,
and that's
supportive.
That's not a comment that you're going to hear out in the mountains.
Well, and I don't want to draw too much of a distinction between urban and rural because I was focusing primarily in this context on making sure that the citizens understand what their resources are. I hear all the time that there are scenarios in which someone calls for service, and then when something shows up, they say, well, is this it? where's the rest of you guys? Or, it's not uncommon. Even in some metropolitan areas, for there to be long response times. I'll guarantee you there's fire captains out there who can tell you that no matter how hard they drove that truck and how fast they drove that truck, they get to the scene and they're greeted with a conversation that begins like this. We called you guys 30 minutes ago. What's taking you so long to get here? And it's not true.
Well, no, it's not true, and it's ironic that one of the biggest complaints that I've heard is how come it takes five vehicles with all these people on it to handle a simple call? There's no pleasing everybody. You're not going to be able to know how to respond to keep the maximum number of people happy.
Well, this leads me into a concept, I guess you might call it, about dialogue between public safety and the citizens that we protect. The more time, effort that we spend on communicating what it is that we're actually being able to provide. This is where this cost versus benefit dialogue goes mm-hmm. on. Unfortunately, it often goes on at the council level or the board level, but it doesn't go on at the community level.
Is there any benefit to getting the public more involved? And I ask that somewhat facetiously because we're talking about getting the public more involved. But if the public got more involved, would we actually come up with solutions or would we just stoke more comments and criticism?
Good question. I think the answer to that, now I know I'm going to come up with another one of my goofy answers, is it could be both. Because all I'm talking about is raising the level of awareness and understanding. And I think in those communities that have a strong sense of cost and the benefits and the services being provided, I think they're better off than a community that doesn't know that.
Well, I think that's where the volunteer fire service, where it's effective, really has an advantage because it is the community. It's much more the community. You look at the career fire service, vast majority of the guys and gals do not even live where they're protecting. Some of them don't even live in the same state. And so the sense of community and the relationship that goes with that just doesn't necessarily exist.
Well, you know, if you call for a police officer, it's probably because you're having some difficulty between you and another human being. But if you call for a fire department, it's because you're having difficulty with something physically happening to you. And it's a different comprehension or understanding of what to expect.
Very good. Well, with that, we're up to our next break. Coming to you live today from Elk Grove, California, with former State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman. On Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, on the flight deck, Richard Dugan, on KZSB AM 1290.
Hey folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Mike and Ronnie Coleman in the Sacramento area. I'm here in the studio. We're talking to them up there. And Mike, take it over.
Well, a reminder here for this Thursday, Santa Barbara Red Cross, 2707 State Street, 9 o'clock, Fire Safe Council meeting. Come meet the new Fire Chief, Eric Peterson, and also join in on a roundtable discussion about what's going on in our neighborhoods and, to a large extent, what we've been talking about today, community risk reduction, community wildfire protection plans, what's going on, what people would like to have go on. There's some great clearing projects that are scheduled in for the San Marcos Pass areas. Come down and learn more about them. Well, Chief, we've been talking about all of this stuff about are we getting our value worth and are we getting what we're paying for, kind of in keeping with our sarcastic theme, so what, who cares?
So
what's on TV tonight and what's for dinner and who was on the TV last night is about all most people really truly care about. And you talked about apathy and who cares? It doesn't matter. We're inundated with so much information that we're breaking down. It's system overload. Do I really need to worry about this? I pick up the phone, the cops show up, the fire department shows up, the ambulance is here. I really don't care. I got too many other things to worry about. Is that a fair assessment of the State of the Union, or am I exaggerating?
Yeah, you are.
Just kidding.
I think that the issue here is who cares is kind of a double-edged sword. I can tell you right now that the average citizen probably is not overly concerned about what level of fire protection is being provided until their house is on fire or their neighborhood is on fire. And we talked about CWPPs earlier, et cetera, and we talked about community risk reduction. And what I'm advocating with this particular discussion we got going here today is not that we're going to go out and make any wholesale changes in what we're doing or how we're doing it or when we're doing it, but the transparency of getting the community involved in it is the important part. It's the need for the neighborhood associations to understand why we need vegetation management programs. It's the need for the business community to know why we need annual inspections. The relationship, I mean, you know I'm a historian, so I can talk a little bit about history. If you go back in 300 years ago, when you had a fire in a community, you know who put the fire out?
The community.
Your neighbors.
You threw the buckets.
You threw down your buckets. In fact, that was one of the commands, is throw down your buckets, and people would open up their front door and throw their fire bucket out, and then every able-bodied male above the age of 18 was expected to get down there and grab those buckets and put that fire out. Well, we don't use too many fire buckets these days. We have apparatus that costs a lot of money. We have staffing that sometimes costs a lot of money. We have volunteers that sometimes don't show up. You see where I'm coming from here? Is that the transparency of what our delivery system looks like needs to have community involvement. I can't emphasize strongly enough the idea that you don't have to become an advocate to become an understanding of the system, or to have an understanding of the system. You don't have to go down to shut down the firehouse. We used to joke also about, there's two things you can't do. You cannot put a new firehouse in an old neighborhood, and you cannot take an old firehouse out of a neighborhood because of the public's reaction to that. So all we're suggesting here is that if you're in that neighborhood, and you know where your resources are coming from, and you know what your community expectations are, and you know how much you're paying for it, you're a better informed person and more likely to be aimed at prevention rather than causing fire.
Well, you know, a recurring conversation we had the other day that you and I were part of about a fire chief who has a fire station that's got a vehicle in it, but nobody's staffing it. And the only reason they keep it there is so that the insurance companies can put down on their form that the closest fire station is right there. And he said he could save some money by selling the truck and putting a cardboard cutout on the inside of the window. And as long as you drove by, it would look like there was something in there, where in reality it wasn't, using studio props. And he was only being half serious and half comical.
Well, I'm not sure how to even respond to what that really means to us in the long run, because it would take another hour-long show, I think.
Right.
But the issue there is that's taking fire protection under false pretenses.
Mm-hmm.
It's not there. And nobody's going to show up. And the community's expectation, once again, I'd be real careful about what I say on a show like this, because I don't want to have anybody point to a particular scenario. But
right,
I can tell you that there are parts of state of California where there is no fire protection at all, and yet there are homes that are extremely valuable in those locations, and they don't even know how much at risk they are, because fire protection is taken for granted. It's something that everybody just kind of thinks is there.
Well, you know, when we look at the highway system and we see that the fire department responds to virtually every traffic collision or an injury that occurs on any of the public highways, somehow the transition in folks' mind that the same people that come to your house at 3 o'clock in the morning when you have a fire or that you have a medical aid are also the ones that are on the highways. I wonder sometimes if the fire service needs to repackage how they are viewed by the public as a whole, that they're three individual services that they provide, but nobody's actually tied them all together as being the same group of people.
2 minutes.
Well, there's one thing, there's a word and a phrase I'll use called all risk management. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's a big theme today under the Department of Homeland Security. Big theme is that we go to everything. The problem with trying to go to everything is how can you possibly be adequately prepared for everything? That's why we're talking here about people becoming more aware of what their level of service is, how much they're paying for it, and what they're getting for it.
Well, and how well can you do a wide berth of different skills versus being very selective? And that raises a whole question about staffing and training and compensation and changes that have occurred in the last 30 years with firefighters and paramedics being two separate distinctive job classifications, and they fused them together. I guess prior to that, you had guys that were trained specifically for different types of specific fires, but then you don't have that kind of staffing anymore.
Yep, very true. I think what we're trying to get to here is the better that you as a homeowner understand your community's delivery system, the more likely they're going to meet your expectations when you understand exactly what they can provide.
Well, with that, we're up to our next break. We'll be coming back for our closing comments with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman, live today from Elk Grove, California, the offices of Fire Force One on Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, KZFB, AM 1290. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, welcome to the last segment of the show. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Ronnie Coleman, State Fire Marshal, retired. Mike and Ronnie are up in Sacramento area, and I'm down here in Santa Barbara Studios. Mike.
Well, thank you, Ted. Any closing thoughts, Chief? We've got about 4 minutes.
Yeah, well, at the very outset of this, we made a comment about the fact that fire protection in a community is not a certainty. What it is a calculated risk. There, and I jokingly said there's no money back guarantee, that you know you're not going to get your money back or your taxes back if you don't have a fire. Fire protection is a element of governance in most communities, and yet it's done to a very large degree sort of in a different language and vocabulary than the citizens themselves fully understand. The time frame for a response and what we do in the first 5 minutes of a fire makes all the difference in the world and the outcome of that. So it's very important that the citizens and the community leaders and people who are involved in providing that service level really understand what they've got. They've got to look beyond the obvious. You can't just look at a fire station and say, oh, we got fire protection because we got a firehouse.
Right.
Because it's not true. And you can't just look at a fire truck sitting there all by itself and say, oh, we got fire protection because there's a fire truck. What's on it? Who's going to drive it?
Well, that's a very common problem that we both see, and that is folks see the vehicles and they just assume the problem's solved. Well, the vehicles don't put the fires out, and the vehicles themselves are not necessarily even used, depending on what kind of fire they're going to.
I think my main theme here is if you really want to get a cost and a benefit out of fire protection, that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Is that community risk reduction means getting the community involved in identifying what issues need to be addressed. Just this morning, I received an email from a friend of mine who has a program where he's doing education in grade school, third graders. And they're going through the process of asking the third graders, you know, well, what does it take to put out a fire? And surprisingly enough, third graders can answer that question. You know, hey, you put water on it. And then he says, well, if what's the best thing you can do to make sure you don't have a fire? And little kids say, well, we ought to prevent them. Well, duh. And this is what we're talking about here, is a shifting attitude towards understanding the community's risk, understanding the community's level of service, and having a real strong sense of you got what you want, and that's what you're going to live with.
Well, Chief, I want to thank you for taking time out and making your office available to us today to do another episode of Community Alert. I appreciate your time.
Pleasure being here, and I hope that we get the message out.
I'm sure we are. This show will repeat throughout the week, and, of course, is available at wildlandresidents.org underneath the Community Alert tag. Richard, I want to thank you for helping us on the technical end here today, getting our bugs worked out. We're alive and well.
Outstanding. Well, so long, you guys. Thanks so much for being a part of it.
Thank you. And then I also want to make sure we remind everybody, FireSafe Council Board meeting this Thursday, Santa Barbara Red Cross, 2707 State Street. Come meet the new Fire Chief Eric Peterson for Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Also, roundtable discussion, catching up on local community events and fire prevention programs existing throughout the South Coast. Again, that's this Thursday, 9 o'clock, Santa Barbara County Red Cross Building, 2707 State Street, and that's the Fire Safe Council for Santa Barbara County. And with that, we'll call it another show. Chief, thank you very much. Ted, back in the studio.
Yes,
Richard,
sir.
Appreciate your help.
Thank you.
Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. On KZSB AM 1290, the news is next. We'll see you next week.
Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, with funding provided by a grant from the Cooperative Fire Program of the U.S. Forest Service, Department of Agriculture, Pacific Southwest Region, through the California Fire Safe Council, with additional funding provided by the Fire Services Training Institute. The views and conclusions contained in this program are those of the hosts and guests and should not be interpreted as representing the opinions or policies of the California Fire Safe Council, U.S. Forest Service, the U.S. government, or this station. Any mention of trade names or commercial products does not constitute their endorsement by the California Fire Safe Council or the U.S. government. Commercial use or rebroadcast is prohibited. For further information, call 805-964-7194 or visit wildlandresidents.org. Technical assistance provided by Richard Dugan, Jim Williams, and Mark A. Ward. The WRA and this station are equal opportunity providers.